Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, we've got Christopher Harris.
Every year anybody has ever invested in him, all he's done is poop on their fantasy team.
Not Christopher, but please do flush. Hey, where's Justin?
If he's just had his afternoon nap, he'll need his tummy rubbed and you'll need his bottle of milk.
Not it.
Jay, I appreciate that you noticed that my greatest skill is just happening to be around at a given time, so thanks.
You were late though today, bro.
Jay, stop talking. Yeah. You're getting to the point where only dogs can hear you speak.
All right, let's just get this thing started then.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the fantasy edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Not 100% fantasy, but a big chunk of today's show devoted to fantasy football, as we have our very special guest, Christopher Harris, joining the program. We'll be talking with Christopher a little bit later on. I am Pod Vader. I'm joined by our three Thursday regulars. At this point, if you don't know them, let me introduce you to them. It is Greg. He is our Steelers super fan. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Jay. Just like to say, I've noticed that Neil's been a busy guy with all those WikiLeaks over there in England, so what's he doing?
Neil is our Washington Redskins superfan. He's in Scotland. What do you have to say about that, Neil?
Well, Jay, it must just be a byproduct of us being absolutely torqued, fired up, ready to go over here. We're like a coiled spring as Washington goes to win its third division title in 5 years. Yep, that's really true.
That's kind of interesting to know. And Justin, who just woke up, good afternoon, Justin. How have you been? He's our Seahawks super fan, by the way.
Good morning here on the West Coast, fellas. Hey, Neil, if you have a leaky wick, you should probably see a doctor.
Nice, Justin. Very nice.
Oh, well done. Well done. Hey, we want to hear from you out there, fans. You can always email us nextfanup@gmail.com. VJ did. He has a question for Christopher Harris. We're going to have that a little later on. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast, and you can always check out what we have going on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast, or of course, just search Next Fan Up in the search bar on Facebook and the page will jump right up. We do a lot of things on our Facebook page right now. You can go and check out all of our archives, all of the former shows that we have, if you didn't want to go and check that out on iTunes, for instance. But you can also read our top 10 players of all time. We did that before the summer began. We also have our Slack conversation about the Deflategate decision and how Tom Brady remains suspended for the first 4 games of the season. So you can check that out if Deflategate is what gets you pumped up in the morning. And yes, I made the pun on purpose. We'll have a whole bunch of things going on. Coming up soon, we'll be talking about each and every preseason game. You're not going to want to miss any of our conversations going on in those places. One of the conversations that we've been talking about pretty much all offseason has been the New York Jets and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And the two parties finally came to a deal. Ryan Fitzpatrick signs a 1-year deal worth $12 million a year with $3 million of achievable bonuses, I guess, achievable in quotes. So he does have the potential of making $15 million this year. That is way less than what Kirk Cousins is making, Neil, and obviously way less than what Brock Osweiler got in Houston. So did Ryan Fitzpatrick hold out properly? Or should he have stuck to his guns and maybe tried to get some more money?
Well, I think there appears to be a little bit of an opportunity there for both sides to claim victory in this. I think the Jets will say, yeah, we got our quarterback on the cheap. But Fitzpatrick, I think I'm right in saying he was offered a 2-year deal a few weeks ago, or that was what was out there in the press, where it was $12 million for the first year. And then I'm going to say $12 million, or was it $6 million over further 2 years? There was some sort of deal quite similar. It looks like they chopped that off, giving them the first year of the deal. I'm intrigued, Jay, by what the £3 million in bonuses. they've termed it as based on team performance. Will that be based on wins or playoff appearance? Or I take it it'll have to be some sort of achievable goal for Fitzpatrick to sign it. But yeah, interesting deal, and we look forward to find out what $3 million extra dollars is for.
Well, according to this article, those $3 million team incentives will take an extended playoff run for him to see any of that money. You mentioned that the Jets had made multiple offers to him previously, including a three-year $24 million proposal that included $16 million in guarantees. So Fitzpatrick ultimately gave up $4 million in guaranteed money for a one-year deal, meaning he's trying to bank on his performance and really cash in next year, which I think is sort of the idea that the Redskins have in terms of Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's spot on. I just, can you release, even if he has a year similar to the one he's just had, which was, you know, I think he threw more touchdowns last year than any Jet quarterback in history with 31. Even if he has that sort of season, do you really see a lot of interest in him next year? I mean, obviously the whole season to go through and quarterback injuries and disappointments, but I don't know. He's going to be a free agent. Good for him, but I don't see the interest in him really long term.
No, there probably won't be any long term interest, and I'm going to throw this over to you, Justin, for no apparent reason other than you're there. A 34-year-old quarterback, I mean, depending on the quarterback, can play, you know, at a pretty decently high level up until the age of 40.
That's definitely true. And Jay, I appreciate that you noticed that my greatest skill is just happening to be around at a given time. So thanks. This deal kind of reflects that the Jets don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick is very good. But because of the Muhammad Wilkerson deal, they had, you know, the cash to spend. I think they're almost banking on either they're wrong and he's a good quarterback and they'll sign him to an actual deal after this year, or they're right and they're probably right and he's lousy and he's going to have a lousy year and they're going to be able to move on to from him without any pressure from people around him. I mean, yeah, we see a lot of good quarterbacks who are good, you know, as they kind of approach that big 4-0, and not just the super elite quarterbacks. I mean, look at some of the, you know, let's say competent quarterbacks that we saw retire in the last decade. You know, your Sage Rosenfels, your Kurt Warner was great, but like Kerry Collins had some pretty good years at the end of his career. I think at best he's kind of in that category. So a 1-year deal here to me screams they're pretty much just trying to sort of get out from under the fan pressure to sign him to a long-term deal because they're confident that he is not a good quarterback.
Greg, I'm going to bring this point up a little bit later on with Christopher Harris. I don't care what quarterback the Jets ended up signing. Those first 7 games of the season for them are ridiculous. They are hosting Cincinnati. I'm still going to take Cincinnati, even though that's a road game for them. They go on the road to Buffalo. That's fine, but that's still your former head coach, and it is a division opponent. So if I'm going to split those games, I'm most likely to give you the disadvantage on the road. Then they go to Kansas City. I love Kansas City. They're my boyfriends. Then they host Seattle. I know Seattle usually plays a little bit worse when they come to the East Coast, but I'm still going to take Seattle. They're at your Steelers in week 5. That's the game Le'Veon Bell returns. Then they're at Arizona. Good luck with that, New York. And then they host Baltimore in... I'm not the biggest Baltimore lover, but I actually have them at a disadvantage against Baltimore. I've got them 0-7 to start the season. Now, that's bold, but I mean, in all honesty, I don't think you could be surprised by that.
No, I think you're right about they're going to have a tough road there, and definitely 3-4 on that stretch would be respectable. But with Fitzpatrick, too, like we're also in an era here where it's never been easier to throw the ball. And he's not exactly the most accurate quarterback ever, but he knows the offense really well. And oh yeah, he has like 2 6'4" wide receivers that he gets to throw the ball to. So he's good enough. Like, again, I mean, they're going to be 7-9, 9-7 when it's all said and done because Fitzpatrick is good enough. But I think they're really hoping with this contract to kick the, you know, kick it down the road one more year, and hopefully Geno Smith or Hackenberg or somebody appears as the real answer in the future. Quasi similar to what Washington did with Kirk Cousins, trying to make sure that someone appears as the quarterback. So, I mean, you definitely have a better than 1% chance of being right about the 0-7. That's for sure. That is a killer schedule. But, I mean, 3-4, the Jets fans have to be feeling pretty good.
I'm quite positive about the Jets season. I mean, you're spot on, Jay. That's a tough start to the season for any team, and certainly for the Jets. But I think with Fitzpatrick back on board, and I think Matt Forte joined them, didn't he, in the off-season, I think they're probably a slightly better team. They've got Wilkerson back in there, happy with his contract. I think they'll be better than 0-7. I think Greg's 3-4 is probably a good shout, maybe even 4-3. Like it. The one question I would have about the quarterback situation is now they've got, well, Bryce drafted, Geno Smith, and Hackenberg. So who's going? They'll keep three quarterbacks. Who's not going to be there?
Petty is the only has the least amount of draft capital in there, and Geno Smith showed some ability. I mean, everyone likes to make fun of him, but he has shown ability. He was a second round draft pick, and Hackenberg's, you know, he's the lock for the whole roster. That's for sure.
Do you think Smith's future depends on how much Petty and Hackenberg show in the preseason?
Yes.
Yeah. I'd also like to retouch on this. I mean, you guys are saying that all these old quarterbacks all succeed and everything. I mean, some of the examples are brought up. Rosenfels was not over 35 years old when he retired. I mean, Rich Gannon was probably 37, 38. I mean, Elway and Marino both made it to about 38. I know that's going back a little ways. Favre was a miracle. He made it to 40, 41. But, I mean, overall, I mean, is Romo going to play past this year? I mean, what is he, 36, 37? I just feel like the critical age for quarterbacks, other than being an all-time great, is going to be 37, 38. I know my quarterback in Pittsburgh, he's 34 entering this season. I don't see him playing past 38.
Oh, you're crazy, Greg.
I'm not crazy. No one wants to talk about it, but everyone forgets that he was involved in a serious motorcycle accident. And he is not moving the same that he used to. The Big Ben that pushed off Terrell Suggs and moved away from him does not exist anymore. He is not a mobile guy. If you watch in the last 2 years, he's getting rid of the ball faster than he ever has by design, because they know the hits have taken a slight toll on him. He does not have the escapability that he once had. And that's
You don't have to be a mobile quarterback to be a successful one in the NFL. And Ben Roethlisberger's one of the most successful QBs in the league right now. This is outrageous what you're saying about your own quarterback. I can't believe I'm defending your quarterback.
Well, listen to my point, though, is that he's already showing signs of age catching up to him slightly. You know, and these quarterbacks and all players in the NFL, they have like their careers are they don't decline slowly. They fall off an edge. And I think there's definitely a chance where we might see it this year with Romo. We might see it with Brady. I mean, they're at that age where you just don't know if they'll play another year or not. We saw it last year and actually 2 years ago with Peyton Manning. I just think when these guys go, they're going to go off a cliff. And there's not, I mean, other than Favre and I don't know, who's the old quarterback from like the 49ers? Many guys don't play into their 40s. 38 seems to be when guys are done. And I mean, that's what happened with Manning. Brady has beaten the odds so far. I mean, I think the Jets, I'm not banking on a 34-year-old journeyman quarterback to make it to 39. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair. A couple things that are worth considering, though. Ben Roethlisberger has been a starter his entire career. I just pulled it up real quick. He started 163 regular season games. Ryan Fitzpatrick has started 113. So Ben Roethlisberger, like just the you know age number side, the number of games you play, I think, makes a really big difference as well. Not to mention the fact that Big Ben has been in a heck of a lot more playoff games. And with his style, he's taken a lot more hits and has definitely suffered more injuries than Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I don't think we can compare just the year that they were born to talk about career longevity. I think that, you know, if we're just talking about having a couple of potentially okay years at the end of his career, the fact that Ryan Fitzpatrick has been a bit of a journeyman probably extends his mediocre career a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The other aspect to this is that 25 years ago, quarterbacks played to their very early 30s and didn't fall off a cliff. They were injured out of the game by defensive players who had free range to hit them where and whenever they wanted. Nowadays, quarterbacks very much protected. I think we see them falling off a cliff from one year to the next just through their own natural decline as human beings in terms of their own fitness and their own sort of physiology. I think that's why we see them just go from one year to the next rather than you see these quarterbacks in the old days who were limping around the field for 3 or 4 years and then finally just dropped out because they couldn't get over the injuries. I think injury is a big, or the style of the game today is a big reason quarterbacks do play to that sort of age. But I think overall in general, I agree with you, Greg.
And I would argue too with Peyton Manning, we all saw the cliff. We all mentioned it at the beginning of last year that Peyton Manning probably shouldn't be suiting up for the season. It was a good thing for him that he did. But we all said that the end was nigh for Mr. Manning. I don't know. I get your point, but at the same time, he is still only going to be 34. So even with your terms, he's still got a 4-year deal in him.
I mean, yeah, but he's also my counterpoint too is I get that you can't compare him to Ben Roethlisberger, who was as big as a horse when he came out with a super strong arm. Fitzpatrick also didn't have that super strong arm. He's also not, you know, an enormous human being. So all that stuff plays a role in it. And I mean, God bless him. I hope he plays till he's 50. But, you know, you're not giving a contract to a guy like him. You're just not. I think the contract they did was perfect.
All right. And as Justin just messaged us, 4 neck surgeries were the cliff for Manning. Yes.
Yes, they were.
All right. I mentioned Christopher Harris a few times. It's been long enough. No need to wait longer for the fantasy guy. And it is my pleasure now to bring in the founder and the creator of HarrisFootball.com. It would be weird if his name was Joel Hatton. His name is Christopher Harris. Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm well. And what's the difference between founder and creator?
I don't know. I don't think there is a difference. I think I was being redundant.
You were just looking to give me an extra title.
I was. I could give you tons of title. President, founder, creator,
manager, janitor.
Yes. The all-in-one man at HarrisFootball.com. Chris, how's it going? How has your offseason been?
I wish there had been one. There actually was one back in the spring or like late winter and spring. I felt like I got a little rest in, but oh my goodness. I don't think I've had a day off, including weekends, for certainly 2 months, probably 2.5 months, I would say. Yeah.
Yes. For all the diehard fantasy fans, they've been clamoring for your content for months now. Now it's the regular football fans that are going to be diving in, getting ready for some fantasy football, probably some newbies. How many newbies do you think we're still getting in fantasy football?
Like, to the actual game of fantasy football, I have no way of knowing. Probably still a lot. I mean, I just think that there's so many people out there, you know, and then someone just decides, okay, I've heard all about it, but now this time I'm going to try it kind of thing. But certainly, like, any one individual media property, you know, has the opportunity to get a lot. And I just, from my own show, knowing how big it got, how quickly, you know, and it's really stated a pretty much higher level than I ever thought it was going to be at in terms of like daily listenership. And now the show in July, it's been 2 days a week. And now starting August 1st, going to be back to 5. So the audience will hopefully be back.
I would hope so. Fantasy football is huge. It's getting bigger day in, day out. The big New York ruling on daily fantasy football happened. It happened in our favor. Woohoo! Go fantasy. tell people what they can expect to find over at harrisfootball.com, especially for those that are just getting into fantasy football.
So, well, it'll be 5 days a week of me going blah, 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 helping you with your draft. The show typically is like half me talking about, you know, injuries or the issues of the day and maybe giving you some evaluations of players on my own. And then the other half of the show is me interviewing someone else from the fantasy industry and, you know, asking them similar type questions. It's a philosophy that's kind of, I don't know. The more other shows I go on, and definitely not yours, Jay, but like the more I hear people just quoting numbers, the more I feel like, you know, our show has a little bit more of an advantage because I sort of found I base my evaluations on the fact that I watch every game. You know, I watch all the film over the course of the season. Not, you know, Monday and Tuesday morning, I will watch every single game that was played that weekend and sort of report what I saw in terms of talent, in terms of ability. And I think I develop an opinion that's based certainly partly on numbers because numbers are good, but I think numbers are good to direct our attention to what, hey, let's watch players play, because this all seems to come from the sabermetric revolution in baseball, which I was very much a part of when I covered baseball and I believe in very much. And the reason we need a way to evaluate players in baseball is because nobody can sit there and watch every pitch. It's not possible. And so we need a way to develop profiles of players that, you know, help us understand what they are when they actually play. And the good thing about football is that there aren't enough games. Like you can actually watch it all. And I think that's the best way to get a sense of whether a player is good or not. I mean, you watch a hell of a lot of Patriots, you watch a hell of a lot of football. And I don't think you'd want anybody telling you that LeGarrette Blount is or isn't that kind of player or this kind of player because of his yards per carry. You know, you have a sense of what he is because you've watched him play. And anyway, on the podcast at harrisfootball.com, that tends to be my approach, you know, less based on trying to suss out what people are based on a numerical profile and more sussing out what they are just on what they are.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because obviously I look into numbers. Stats is something that I used to look into very deeply on a fairly daily basis. Last week we had Warren Sharp on from Warren Sharp's or sharpfootballanalysis.com. I like what he's done because he's taking those numbers and he's explaining what you're seeing on, you know, when you watch a player, he's taking the numbers and explaining why you're seeing the player play in this particular manner. And I think it's all very intriguing. It's funny. I have this conversation all the time about other things. It's not a one or the other type of thing. It's really a combination of everything that gives you the best informed picture into what you should be doing. So you shouldn't be all about the numbers and you shouldn't be all about your gut. It should be a little bit of both.
You know, I'm not saying gut, because I'm not just saying like, oh, you know, I'm not shooting from the hip and going, I just feel like this guy's going to have a good season. I'm talking about eyeballs. But I'm 100% with you that it's not. The problem I have is the industry seems to be skewing towards people who view stat. Like, a lot of people who think that saying a statistic is like a mic drop. You know, you can't really debate this number. His yards per carry is low. You know, and then if you try to debate that number, they go, yeah, but his yards per carry is low. You know, right. And I don't find that to be very. So I'm with you. I certainly look at numbers. I let numbers guide my attention a lot of the time, but I feel like my eyes are better evaluator of whether someone's a good player. You know, I feel like I can watch Melvin Gordon play from this past, you know, 2015, and see some stuff that I like, and see a very tough situation, and find a pretty intense silver lining, and you're not going to find that in the numbers.
Well, here's a perfect example for us, Mr. Harris. As last year, we had a fairly we had a bet that didn't really have a payout. But you were a big lover of the Minnesota Vikings. I was a big hater, and then I was a big lover of the Falcons, and you were a big hater. And so I talked with Warren Sharp last week and I went, oh, look at these numbers from Teddy Bridgewater on third down. The dude can't throw deep whatsoever. And really on second down, he's just about average. And, you know, what Warren did was he was like, well, if you break that down and you really look at what was happening, you know, the way that the offense was being called, they were running it on first down so often and the play calling got so predictable that it really hampered Teddy Bridgewater. And so for you, what I want to talk about in terms of Teddy Bridgewater and your love of the Minnesota Vikings, I mean, you love the Minnesota Vikings, is that is Teddy Bridgewater really, is he a product of the system or is he being hampered by the system that he's in?
I totally agree with Warren. That's a great take from what I see as well. I think he's being hampered. I think he's a better player than statistics would ever show right now. And so people who would only look at numbers would say, oh, he's a bad player. And in fact, I think he's a relatively good player, although I will say limited. You know, I think from what I've seen, if I lined up every quarterback in the NFL and ranked them by arm strength, Teddy Bridgewater would probably be bottom five. That's fair. You know, mm-hmm. he's not a power arm. Anybody can throw a deep ball, right? I mean, you know, all of them can throw it straight up in the air a long way. That's really not the test. The test is the 18-yard out across the field, you know, that you need to zing on a line or else it's going to get picked, right? And we don't see Bridgewater do that a lot. And, you know, I'm not going to say I'm sure that he can't, but I'm assuming at the moment, based on what I've seen, that's not something that's in his arsenal. And yet, there have been plenty of players who've been super great, Hall of Fame type players. I mean, Joe Montana used to joke that he couldn't break a pane of glass, you know, and not calling Teddy Bridgewater Joe Montana, but I'll tell you a couple of players skills-wise who I think Bridgewater compares to, and they're both sort of late-career guys. One is late-career Rich Gannon when he was the MVP of the league with the Raiders, you know, the year they lost the Super Bowl. Great, great season. Dude had nothing left in his arm. And I'll say the Philip Rivers of right now, you know, just not a huge arm any longer. He used to have a very big arm, but years of shoulder problems have sort of limited that. What Bridgewater lacks in sheer arm strength, arm talent, like they say, which I hate arm talent, it's lame. He makes up for in anticipation, savvy, reading progressions in a way that, you know, a guy coming out of his second year typically isn't capable of doing. He's just a really smart kid. You know, there's one very high profile, stupid play that he made last year at the end of regulation against the Cardinals when all they had to do was kick a field to go to overtime. He stretches himself, makes a dumb decision, throws a pick, loses the game. And otherwise, I don't come up with a lot of, you know, glaring mental mistakes that Bridgewater made. And I still like the kid a lot. Of course, for fantasy, Warren's right. You know, the system is really predictable. It wants to throw short. And it wants to run. And, you know, that is going to tend to crush a quarterback's fantasy value.
Love it. Love it. So there's a few more questions I want to talk to you about before I dive into some of our listener questions. And the first part is I've been telling people don't draft Cleveland Browns. And that might be a little bit of an overstatement. But, I mean, is there really any Cleveland Brown worth drafting?
I think you're giving good advice, Jay. I think we're on the same page. I mean, you know, I just did a segment where someone said, Torrey Smith is definitely going to be a top 30 fantasy wide receiver because Chip Kelly always throws it to outside receivers a ton. So how is Torrey Smith not getting 120 targets? And that's exactly the kind of thinking that gets you Torrey Smith on your team and never being able to use him. Because, fine, we don't know what other 49er receiver is going to emerge and, you know, steal targets away from Torrey Smith. But all I know about Torrey Smith is, every year anybody has ever invested in him, all he's done is poop on their fantasy team. You know, it's sort of the guy just isn't really a number one receiver. He hasn't been yet in his career. And I bring that up by way of saying, I think you're right on Cleveland because, okay, yeah, fine. They're going to run. They're going to throw it. Every NFL team's going to throw it 500 times. So someone's going to get some targets, right? And the argument you're going to get in favor of Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon, Duke Johnson is – somebody's got to get targets. Someone's got to catch it. And it feels to me like whenever we say that, we wind up owning Bishop Sankey. You know, we don't love the players, but we say, ah, the situation's good enough, what the heck? And then the team is historically bad, and nobody's any good. Nobody's useful. The players that I would be, you know, open to owning with the right value, Josh Gordon, because he's been the number one receiver in fantasy. If you told me I could get him in the seventh round, I would take Josh Gordon. But I assume in most drafts, someone's going to buy the hype on him and buy him sooner than that, even with the four-game suspension. And then Duke Johnson, especially in a PPR league, I don't think Isaiah Crowell sets up as a good bet with an offensive line that got, it was bad last year and got way worse. You know, I don't think he's a really talented player, doesn't have a really diverse game. So my guess is that Crowell sort of winds up being like a guy who runs into the line and falls down, and there's not going to be a lot of room for him. And Duke Johnson, you know, if you're going to do something with an offensive line, you sort of got to go around. So, you know, I don't really want to own any of them, though. I mean, I'm kind of stretching to come up with someone I would kind of care to own.
You know, we'll be talking about Josh Gordon a little bit later on in the podcast, me and the super fans. You know, the guy that we started the show with is Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Jets. And, you know, now I'm seeing, I can't believe I've actually seen this said on national television. Oh, the Jets are now division contenders with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't care what quarterback you have, but I don't care if it was Tom Brady on the New York Jets. That first seven games of the Jets schedule is absolutely redonkulous. And I don't see the Jets contending for much of anything other than, you know, trying to stay afloat and maybe developing some of those young quarterbacks they have.
You know, I'm always skeptical of saying that we know what strength of schedules are before the season starts. Something looks tough on paper, and then it turns out, you know, a couple guys are hurt or, you know. I think good teams tend to wind up with pretty good records, and if the Jets have a good roster, and they had a pretty good roster last year. You know, they were choking dogs in the end. What a shock. But, you know, they had a good roster, and it's a defense that's undergone some changes, and, you know, frankly, I think it's worse, but I'm not 100% sure because they added guys too. And then offensively, it feels like, how's Matt Forte not going to make you better? You know, if he's healthy, they ought to be pretty okay. You know, for me, it's the typical Jets 9-7, 10-6 team, and we'll see how the playoffs shake out. I can't look at a schedule right now and tell you who's good, who's not good. You know, they're a better team. You know, they had no shot if Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't sign. You know, you're not going to be any good at all in that kind of an offense. I mean, you know, just to prove that I know some numbers, and I don't disdain all stats or whatever, but the Jets last year ran 404 offensive snaps with 4+ receivers on the field. Okay, so 4 wide or more.
Yeah.
404 snaps. No other team had more than 143.
I was going to say, that sounded like a lot.
It is a lot. Relatively speaking, it's a lot. And it's the Chan Gailey offense. It's the spread them out, throw it short to Brandon Marshall, let him rumble. You know what I mean? And then hopefully the defense kind of cheats up, and then Eric Decker goes to the end zone, runs the post. You know, I wouldn't have trusted any other quarterback on that roster to run that offense because you do need to be smart. You know, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick has a lot of bullheadedness to him. He will make mistakes in bad situations, but he certainly knows how to run that offense. He's been with Gailey with the Bills before. He was good with them last year. He'll probably throw a bunch more picks this year, but, you know, I don't think the Jets are going to stink, and I think that there's still some, you know, that the receivers aren't going to be as good as they were last year. You know, you had Brandon Marshall 3 and Eric Decker 10 or something like that. Like, that's probably not realistic, but I think they're both ownable, and I think Forte's ownable. You know, that Ryan Fitzpatrick I wouldn't feel great about using, but I think that offense will be good enough to produce some fantasy points.
In terms of fantasy, yes, I would agree. But off the fantasy, I mean, you're not buying it. You're looking at Cincinnati.
How many wins?
The first seven games?
No, just give me the season.
Oh, in the season, I believe I've got the Jets at 7-9 when I went through and did my pick a winner for every game.
If you say 7 and I say 9, do we have a bet?
Oh, we have another bet. I like it. Okay.
But now I have to root for the Jets. Like,
I know.
I don't think I want that bet.
See? I don't think you do either. I mean,
yeah.
Those first seven games, Chris, you're hosting Cincinnati, so at least you're hosting them, but I'm taking Cincinnati. as a better team in terms of roster. You're at Buffalo against your former coach, and you're at Buffalo. If you're going to split games, I'm usually going to give you the advantage in your home game against the team. So you're looking at a disadvantage there. You're at Kansas City. I'm super high on Kansas City this year. I've got them winning the Super Bowl. You then are hosting Seattle. Yes, Seattle tends to play worse when they come to the East Coast, but it's still Seattle. You're at Pittsburgh. Everybody else's Super Bowl darlings. Then you're at Arizona, another Super Bowl contender, and then you're hosting Baltimore. Now, what are your thoughts on Baltimore? Because that's an interesting team, especially fantasy-wise. We had an interesting conversation, the Superfans and I, last week about this Dynasty League that they created. And the one rule was, as the Superfan of that team, you had your first pick of the draft had to be the player that was on your team. And so the Ravens super fan, who would be their number one draft choice in terms of a dynasty league?
Wow, that's a really great question in terms of a dynasty league. And you have to take them first overall. That's brutal. There's literally no one. You know, and I guess
I said it had to be Flacco.
You don't want Flacco in fantasy. He's a disaster for fantasy. He's a disaster for real-life football. He's a disaster. We think, you know, he's a made guy because of the playoff run, because of the Super Bowl, because he's been okay in the playoffs at times. But he just from play to play, Joe Flacco is a disaster. You know, he'll make a lovely throw, and literally the next play is 7 feet over Kamarikin's head. I don't think it's Flacco. I think I might just go Steve Smith and throw him back. You know, like, clearly I don't want him. This is last year. Clearly I'm not interested in having him longer term, but, you know, I would like to win this year. That's one thing philosophically about dynasty ranks, where I think there's so much groupthink when it comes to ranking for dynasty about how young players only, 24 is too old. You know, I want the super young players, and therefore Larry Fitzgerald goes in the 12th round, you know, and I like Larry Fitzgerald this year. And so, you know what, I'm going to take him and I'm going to beat you this year, because you know why I play fantasy football? Because I want to win the championship. You know, I'm not really interested in winning the 2022 championship right now. I want to win the 2016 championship. So maybe I would go, you know, Steve Smith himself comes with all sorts of worries coming up the torn Achilles, but at least he was on pace for a really good fantasy year last year before he got hurt. And I don't know how much he has left, but boy, it's tough for me to go Kenneth Dixon. It's tough for me to go Breshad Perriman. Those guys might be nothing.
I mean, that's Kenneth Dixon was the guy that the Ravens superfan ultimately brought up as just sort of a let's hope and see that maybe he
right.
becomes
yeah.
like the lead back in that particular league with that particular rule. I understood
yeah.
that, and that makes all the sense in the world. But
it
you
does.
Mentioned it. I was telling these
yeah.
guys in Dynasty, I don't care. In year one, I still want to beat you. I don't care
that's
if
right.
the guy is 30 years old or 20
right.
years old. I want to win and win now, baby. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, dynasty-wise, I probably go 50-50. I do value career length, but I'm not going to tell you that a guy who I think is going to be a top 20 player to this position this year is worthless because he's old. Like, that's just bananas. But it really is. I was on a dynasty podcast a couple nights ago, and they were super nice about it. They were like, what are you smoking? They're like, how can you have Larry Fitzgerald as the top 50 overall player? How can you have Adrian Peterson as the top 25 player? You know, these guys are almost done with their careers. And I'm like, yeah, they're great. I want them now. And they just, they don't see it.
Well, that's why we win fantasy championships, Chris, and they don't. Let's take a couple of, I got a couple of emails, tweets, and other things that were sent in to us. This one comes to us from VJ. He emailed nextfanup@gmail.com and says, so I have the number three pick in a 12-team PPR. That would be points per reception, if you don't understand that lingo. And I know you do, Christopher. I was more speaking to the audience. And I've done multiple mocks, and it seems my teams always look better when I go wide receiver there. That said, a part of me really wants to go Todd Gurley at number three. Maybe it's bias living in LA. Can you make a viable case for Gurley at number three, or should I set aside bias and just go with whoever is left between Odell and Julio? And now I know, Christopher Harris, you will do a plug for your rankings on harrisfootball.com, because that is where you can always answer these types of questions. And you have three wide receivers as the number one option in PPR scoring.
I do, although I don't feel so dogmatic about it that if someone wanted to go Peterson or Gurley, I wouldn't think that that's disastrous. Because in a standard scoring league, that's how I have them rated. You know, I have AP 1, Gurley 2, and Jamal Charles 3, actually. And then the receivers come. But in point per reception, I do have those first three guys slightly above the running backs. You know, in terms of roster construction, it does feel easier when you take the running back. I get that. You know, I get it. Like, there are so many good wide receivers. You know, I'll get a good wide receiver coming around back the other way. I don't care if I get the 20th receiver. It's still going to be a good receiver. But, you know, if it's running back who I feel like I need at the turn, you know, I'm struggling sometimes. It depends on the league. Maybe everybody goes receiver and there's still some running backs left that you like. But the letter of the law is as you describe it, which is, I probably for me would take one of those receivers, but I would not scoff at someone who took one of the stud running backs.
You really like Todd Gurley, huh?
He's a great player. You know, he's a great player. And, you know, my criteria for evaluating fantasy situation, you know, fantasy draft picks, let's say, is talent one and situation two, and then pass stats like eight, and there is no 3-7. No, that's not true. Pass stats would probably be third. You know, I get that the situation is, I guess, scary, but it's no scarier than it was last year. In fact, it got the potential to be better than it was last year. You know, I don't know what the quarterback is. He might stink because most rookie quarterbacks stink, but he's not going to be worse than Case Keenum and Nick Foles. You know, he's going to be at least that good. Offensive line wasn't good last year. You know, they drafted a couple of guys on the right side of their line who one of them got hurt last year, and now they're second-year players and presumably healthy. So do I know who they are? Do I know if they're good? I don't, but there's at least a chance that they're better. And then, you know, a couple of young tight ends, we'll see if any of them are an improvement on Jared Cook. How could they almost not be? So, you know, basically I'm coming down neutral on the situation. It's crappy, but it was crappy last year. So I'll say Gurley can produce with the occasional hiccups. No question. I remember that Gurley game against the Bengals. You know, he didn't do a lot, and that was very frustrating, but overall, what a stud.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to oversimplify and say, well, Gurley is really their only weapon, so teams are going to be keying on Gurley, and I don't see that sort of offensive production. Right. But when I am drafting that high, that is something that I would sort of knock him down. Like, I definitely wouldn't be afraid to have Todd Gurley as my lead back on my fantasy team, but I don't know if I want to take him number two overall.
I think that's a fair point of view. It isn't mine because I think he's a generational type talent. I think he's, you know, he's not quite Adrian Peterson, but that's, I consider that to be a different generation. But I think I liken him to a cross between Marshawn Lynch and Ricky Williams. You know, just a lot of long speed and a lot of acceleration like Ricky Williams did. But Lynch had that ability in traffic to just, you know, make people miss and also just run you over. And boy, Gurley's awfully good. And listen, they are, you know, I'm not going to say that your argument is a bad one, but I will say you could have made it last year and you would have missed out because he was awesome. You know, The same situation. Like, defenses knew what was coming. You know, he still ran all over the Arizona Cardinal defense. You know, it's a pretty good defense. So I don't share your concerns, but I don't think they're irrational concerns.
Monty, who's our Raiders super fan and could have cheated and just sent this directly to me or used our Slack conversation, did tweet at me and at NFU podcast and asked, who was yours, Christopher's, biggest surprise of 2015? And who was the biggest trash bag? # L. Murray needs a new nickname.
Golly, can I even remember 2015 and what I thought of anything? You know, Blake Bortles, Kirk Cousins, those guys are pretty big surprises. You know, I don't think either one's all that good, but their numbers were insane. So maybe I should say that. I mean, Devontae Freeman, let's say Devontae Freeman, that's the biggest surprise. You know, by the end of the season, it felt like the league had sort of caught up with what Devontae Freeman can do. And I'm not going to say they took it away completely, but, you know, to start the year, I think what the book on Devontae Freeman was, like, super quick, unbelievably hyper quick dude, stay in your lane, or rather go get him, right? Don't let him get to the outside. And so you saw people just pursuing like crazy to try to beat him to the sideline, essentially. And defense is basically playing a little bit soft up the middle against him. And to Freeman's credit, he made a bunch of plays up the middle. You know, a lot of that, you know, a lot of goal line work that somebody his size you wouldn't think would succeed on. A lot of just like simple one-cut runs, you know, little line box basically, where he's just bolting through the line in a way that you wouldn't typically see. And by the second half of the season, I think defense has decided, you know what, let's let this guy get to the perimeter. He'll hurt us sometimes, and he did. He still kept hurting teams, but you didn't see the up-the-gut stuff anymore because he's just too small to make anything happen on his own up the middle. And for me, that sort of screams, you know, relatively limited player in the longer term, but my God, he was so awesome. He was so surprising. Trash bag. Take your pick. C.J. Anderson. I'll say C.J. Anderson. He was garbage last year. I love how everybody's ready to forgive him this year because of, like, you know, three good playoff games. But I am not.
Speaking of garbage, you mentioned Blake Bortles, and I've seen a lot of people talk about the regression coming for the Jaguars, noting that Bortles, a lot of his production came in garbage time. Are you amongst those people? Or, I mean, you just mentioned that you didn't think Blake Bortles was that good. So I'm very curious because I do like what the Jaguars are doing and kind of was hoping that they were taking a step forward, but it sounds like that may not be the case.
You know, Allen Robinson, I think, is legit, and having a legit one receiver can certainly help a quarterback. So let's not take that away from Bortles. And, you know, they've got a couple of running backs that I like, and I'm not really sure about the line, but who knows? Could be good, you know. So I definitely have taken note of the idea that Bortles was essentially, you know, his own guy who dug his own grave and then was able to have a lot of stats sort of trying to dig himself out. And that typically doesn't recur from year to year. I've taken note of it, but it wouldn't be the main, you know, let's say that's more effect than cause. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the cause is mechanically as a quarterback, Blake Bortles is still a total mess. Just, you know, really good athlete, underrated runner. Like, I think there's a chance that we're not giving him enough of a safe floor with the idea that, you know, he could run for 600 yards and it wouldn't be a shock. But as a thrower, his footwork is disastrous and he gets himself in crazy body positions when he's throwing. And when he's on the run and tries to throw, I mean, honestly, if it stays in the stadium, it's a good day. He's very wild. And so, do you know, he's been in the league 2 years. Do you rule out the possibility that the Jags know this? I'm sure the Jags know this, and they're trying like hell to work on it with him and get him better and take all the good stuff he did last year and take away some of the bad stuff. I definitely wouldn't rule it out. Young players do sometimes get better. I mean, he's probably 23 years old, 24 years old. But I didn't see it on film yet. And for me, you know, the reason I'm dubious and the reason I think he takes a step back statistically is because just from a, you know, pure mechanical, how you play quarterback in order to have a repeatable motion and therefore be an accurate thrower and make good decisions and stuff is just, it's the opposite of what he does.
I could literally talk to you for hours, Chris, especially about football. And James gave me some great questions. I'm going to pick one of James to end this on. And it's a sort of philosophical question in terms of fantasy. Would you rather take a chance on a second-year player that underperformed last year or an unproven rookie?
I'm going to have to not answer because I so don't think of it in terms. I always think of it in terms of the player themselves, right? Mm-hmm. It so depends on who the player is. You know, Melvin Gordon, I'm very much willing to take a chance on because I saw enough that I liked, and if you get the fumbling under control, I want him over a rookie that I don't know what he is yet. Probably not over Zeke Elliott, but, you know, over maybe any other rookie running back. But, say, you know, Amir Abdullah, I'm a little less excited about, so you probably could convince me for maybe a couple of the rookie running backs over him. Let me constrict the hypothetical to see if I can, you know, let's say a rookie whose expectations that I had last year are exactly the same as the rookie from this year, but the guy last year didn't do it yet. You know, so it's almost like the same player, right? Mm-hmm. My level of love for him, I would tend to want the rookie. I would tend to want the one who hasn't proven that he can't do it yet, you know? Right. But unfortunately, you know, it's really sort of, there's no such thing as in a vacuum because, you know, I've built up opinions from watching them on tape.
Well, and I'll mention real quick, because you mentioned the player, Ezekiel Elliott. I've seen him as high as in people's top fives. You have him ranked at number 20 for a standard scoring league. So kudos to you, first of all, because I'm also not on the Ezekiel Elliott hype train just yet.
Yeah, and like we should clarify, that puts Elliott, I think, at RB7, right? So this is more a case of just having a lot of receivers in front of him, not necessarily a lot of running backs. But you're right. I mean, I've seen people have Elliott as their number one running back. I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how you can, like, nobody likes Elliott as a prospect more than I do. I think he's awesome. But I don't know how you could say in a redraft league you should be taking a player you've never seen play in the NFL before as your number one running back. It's all projection, and some of that projection is based on what we legitimately think he has in terms of skills. But, I haven't mentioned this almanac thing, right? So I have this almanac that I've written that's like 107 pages of player profiles and a lot of film review, a lot of stat historical perspective and stuff. And just going back and looking at first-round running backs over the past, let's say, in the 2010s, you want to believe that these guys are guaranteed workloads. And, in fact, they are utterly not guaranteed workloads. It averages out, if you take, I think, since 2010, all of the first-round running backs, 209 touches in their rookie seasons, which translates to 13 touches per game. And, you know, in all of those cases, someone was making the argument, they wouldn't have drafted him if they weren't going to play him right away, right? And in some cases they did, but in a lot of cases they didn't. And if Zeke Elliott winds up with 13 touches a game, people are going to scream bloody murder. You know, I think it's easy to say, oh, he's guaranteed the workload. Who are Alfred Morris and Darren McFadden? What trash bags? You know, maybe later in the year that's true. I just feel like if you're going to presuppose that kind of workload for a guy who's never done the NFL, you're braver than I.
Awesome. That is Christopher Harris. You can find him over at harrisfootball.com. You're at Harris Football on Twitter too, right?
I am indeed. And finally, like a lot of people have pre-ordered this almanac. I'm sure some of your listeners have. And it's coming out August 1st. So coming out on Monday, like I said, 107 pages in a PDF. Nice. Will be delivered to people's inboxes. But if people haven't bought it yet, it's $15, and you can find the details at the website. And makes for a lot of good reading. I think people will think it's funny. There's a lot of jokes there.
and it should be noted that Harris Football is not your only love. You're also doing a non-football show.
I am. Thank you for mentioning it. It's called The Juggernaut, and it's a weekly interview show about books and TV and music and movies. With people sort of who have cool idiosyncratic tastes, trying to sort of get away from the corporate generic entertainment that kind of gets crammed down our throats, you know, trying to get into a little more indie, a little more, you know, stuff that isn't necessarily just obscure, but, you know, just stuff that we think is really good and kind of atypical. And hopefully people will enjoy listening.
Awesome, Chris. We will be talking to you again, I'm sure, multiple times before the end of the season. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
So there goes Christopher Harris. Please do go buy his almanac. I can tell you right now, there is no man other than maybe Bill Belichick and Tom Brady that watches more tape on the NFL than Christopher Harris. That man is a football watching machine. It's really good to know Christopher Harris. Let's move away from the fantasy aspects, although we did mention this player briefly with Christopher. Josh Gordon has been reinstated on a conditional basis, and I'm reading from the NFL's public release that Roger Goodell has notified Josh Gordon that he has been reinstated to the NFL on a conditional basis. He may join the team at training camp and participate in meetings, conditioning work, and similar activities. However, he will still miss the first four games of the regular season and will be eligible to return to the team beginning Monday, October 3rd. And during this suspension, Gordon will still be able to participate in team meetings and other activities, but may not attend or participate in practices or games. And this is all due to Gordon's violations of the policy and program for substances of abuse. Very interesting that the commissioner has decided to wield his power, his almighty power, in this manner. I certainly did not foresee this coming. What are your thoughts here, Greg, on Josh Gordon being reinstated in this manner?
On the just the reinstatement, for some reason, this guy just doesn't have the rules apply to him in general. He always seems to get off lightly or get a special exception.
You're talking about Roger Goodell, right?
I'm talking about Gordon. I mean, he had both his drug suspensions reduced from 4 games to 2 games and then from a whole season to 10. And now he gets a second chance, you know, 4 months after he was not fit, just in April or something to rejoin the league. So I don't know what he has on Goodell, but it's pretty good. It must be because he gets, I mean, every time they talk about throwing the book at him, it seems to miss. So.
And you have a player in Le'Veon Bell who seems to think he's not missing any time, but in fact, he's got a 4-game suspension and doesn't look like that's going to go away anytime soon.
And it shouldn't. I mean, the rules are the rules. I don't care if he says he's changed his cell phone number so he could hide from the testing police. I mean, who gives a crap? Show up for the test. If you don't show up for the test, you're going to miss games. It was pretty black and white. So, I mean, apparently Le'Veon Bell thinks he's like the cousin of Josh Gordon, so he's going to get stuff reduced. But the rules are the rules. So, you know, whatever.
Neil, thoughts here on the suspension of Josh Gordon and being reinstated?
I'm actually really pleased he's been reinstated. Not because he's a great player and all the rest of it, but I'd like to see guys who get a chance and hopefully he'll grab this third or fourth chance. He'll grab it in the midst of all the disappointing suspensions and we've seen. I mean, I think we saw Alden Smith's video recently as well. And then I am always left with the hope that one of these guys will come back and turn themselves around and make a great contribution to the great game.
I will say that in terms of this particular player, having him be around the organization, I think is actually better for him than telling him that, hey, you're not allowed to be, you know, step foot on campus in the least bit. So that aspect of it is interesting that the NFL sort of bent to allow that to happen. I'm of the opinion he should not have been reinstated at all. But then again, I also have a player that's been suspended for 4 games for deflating footballs. So what do I know, Justin?
Yeah, I'm going to take your and Greg's opinion on him with a grain of salt, since you guys have both been burned by the league, and Gordon's getting off a little bit easy. So you guys are probably justifiably a little salty about it. Here's my thing with Josh Gordon. He's been out of the league for over a year now. And the last year that we saw him in the league, he played 5 games. He had one really good game. Then he was really pedestrian for the rest of the season. You know, even with him back, I'm not convinced that he's even a remotely special player at this point. And you're putting him in an offense with a quarterback that I think is not remotely special at this point. You know, he's a player who basically is making an entire career out of one amazing 14-game stretch. And it was an incredible 14-game stretch. But even with him coming back, I'm not excited about him for fantasy. I'm not excited about him for real football. You know, I would love to see him turn things around and have a great career. I think, you know, he's kind of an underdog right now. And, you know, the only thing that we like more than watching stars get knocked down is to see them kind of bring themselves back up. I think it's just sort of something that, you know, it speaks to us as people liking to see those kind of redemption stories. And I'd love to see that, but I'm real skeptical.
I'd like to add in here. The one thing is, I think it is nice that he is going to be around the team. And I wish they would make that with more guys, because I think a Justin Blackmon could have used that for when he was suspended for the year. And I think my guy Bryant could use that. They just seem a little bit immature. It'd be nice, you know, since the teams do have a huge investment in these guys and interest in them succeeding, it'd be nice if the NFL relaxed the rules and let them be around the teams when they're gone for these suspensions. You know, structure has to be good for these guys. And like Brian, I'm concerned he's going to be 250 pounds and, you know, totally forget what a football is when he comes back in a year. So if he ever does come back. And I think that's a archaic thing that the guy has to go away because he, you know, got caught doing drugs.
I think that's a terrific point. I think Jay, you also made that point, just keeping it in and around the facility. Though he's going to be playing with Robert Griffin if Griffin wins the starting job. So it'll be a Baylor offense there with Griffin, and I think the Coleman they drafted, he's also from Baylor. So you'll have the two Baylor receivers and the Baylor quarterback. I do wonder, though, is there a chance that they might bring him in, get him playing a few games, and then trade him?
Cleveland thinks he's being – all the sports radio in Cleveland thinks he's being traded to the Patriots for a second-round draft pick in week four. So they think it's going to be Brady and Gordon playing for the Patriots in week five against the Browns.
So. All the criminals reunited, huh?
Oh, that is a fantastic story. I will revolt. I literally will revolt. I might even puke live on this podcast if that becomes a true story. That's the Patriots are very calculated when it comes to dealing with players that have sort of that shady past. And I don't know how this, how they got this reputation in terms of dealing with players with shady pasts, because I mean, we're looking at like clock killing Corey Dillon. He was mad that he was on a bad team. So of course, when he went from the Bengals at that point to the Patriots, he went from a bad team to a good team. So of course he's all happy. There's nothing to deal with. You know, I know that there's a little bit of talk about Martellus Bennett. Again, look at where Martellus Bennett's coming from. A bad team. Now he's on a good team. Why in the world would he have a problem? Randy Moss.
Okay, Jay, stop like, talking. Jay, stop talking. Yeah. You're getting to the point where only dogs can hear you speak. The one good thing to know there, Jay, is finally an admission that you're going to revolt. And as we all agree with you, the Patriots are pretty revolting.
Oh, I did leave myself open for that kind of shot. All right, very good. Well, let's talk about more suspensions, because suspensions are fun to talk about. The Cowboys now have three players that will be suspended this year: Rolando McClain, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Randy Gregory. Gregory could be facing a longer ban than what he currently has, as he apparently has multiple violations of the substance abuse policy. Now, according to this article I'm reading from Adam Schefter, the league is still formulating this year's fine schedule, which is based on the number of players suspended on a single team. Last year, that range was $250,000 for a team with three players suspended. Apparently, the fines are not expected to decrease under the new schedule. Still, only $250,000. That seems like a drop in the bucket for someone like Jerry Jones, Neil.
It's an odd one, isn't it? You can understand them getting fines. We have the same thing in our soccer over here. If you have so many players who get yellow cards and red cards, then if you get so many in a game, then you get fined as well. It's a good idea, but like you say, the fine is it's like £10, isn't it? From my point of view, from Jerry. Good news for the NFC East, though, in the sense that we're going to lose Gregory, but potentially 10 games. Rolando McClain for 10 games, and Marcus Lawrence for 4. So there goes most of their pass rush and the spine of their defense. So, yeah, shame for those guys, and goodness, they've got to sort themselves out. But that's good news for the NFC East.
Justin, do you have any thoughts here on the Cowboys and their suspended players?
Yeah. I wonder about the head coach there, Jason Garrett. I mean, can we agree that there's probably no head coach in all of the NFL, if not professional sports, who has less power and less pull than Jason Garrett? I mean, I swear he probably has to ask permission to go use the bathroom from Jerry Jones. and as a result, he has, I promise you, no control over team discipline whatsoever. Every time a player gets cut or moved around, the media asks him about it, and he just kind of dodges the question. Then eventually they talk to Jerry Jones, and Jerry Jones says what's going on. So, because he's the boss. And I actually think Jason Garrett is a pretty good X's and O's guy and probably would be a good head coach if he was allowed to be one somewhere. But this is an organization that historically prides itself on being able to take some of those guys with a couple character concerns and through just the power of the organization, keep everybody on the straight and narrow. And you go back to the 90s, they had a lot of success with that. Nowadays, not so much. I think they're doing really a terrible job of it. You look at the Greg Hardy situation, which blew up in their faces. You have these guys suspended again. This is a team that has absolutely no control over transgressions of their personnel right now. And on a normal organization, the person who's calling those shots would probably get fired by the owner. But of course, this is Jerry's world. Everything is going to be Jerry's way.
Greg? Also, Gregory was a second-round pick. A second-round pick is a very valuable pick to be wasting on a guy who barely gets on the field because he can't control his own personal habits.
Well, I think the Cowboys are just showing us, their stalwart on defense is my boy Sean Lee from Penn State. And with all these other guys, they apparently think defense is really overrated because they're going to be playing like six against 11. So,
and Sean Lee only plays half a season usually.
I thought he played like six quarters, but yeah.
By the way, buried the lead on today's show. Training camp is open for most of the NFL. Practices have gotten underway. We already have our first cart sighting, and that's in Chicago. Chicago Bears first round pick Leonard Floyd was carted off of the field. I still don't have an update on what the injury may have been. The Chicago Tribune reporting that he felt sick, or at least that's sort of the news that they had. Interesting that the rookie would be sick in the first practice. That doesn't bode a good sign.
No, not for a guy who really needs to bulk up if he's going to do anything in this league. But yeah, I think you're right, Jay. The latest report I saw was it was possibly heat related or dehydration. So fingers crossed he's all right.
Yeah, that's according to our Bears Superfan who chimed in, Tom, with some of the stuff he was hearing. He seemed to indicate that it was possibly tied to the heat, which anytime you see the cart come out, that's probably best case scenario. I mean, the cart comes out, you assume somebody has completely Jimmy Graham'd their knee. So if it's just some IV fluids he needs and some rest, that's not bad.
We were about to send the cart out for you this morning, Justin.
Oh, that's great. Neil, you had mentioned as we had met pre-show, Junior Gallette has a cart that he's going to have to ride on for quite some time still.
Yeah, and everybody knows Gallette's backstory. He's not the most popular player in the NFL, and he's probably as a lucky boy to be even signed to a team currently. He did his Achilles last season in the preseason, and he didn't play a snap for us. We re-signed him. We had a deal to retain his rights for this season and signed him up for, I mean, it's almost league minimum he's on, the sort of prove-it deal. And then he goes and does his other Achilles. So lucky he doesn't have three legs or he'd probably miss another full season. But not going to be missed, I think there's a lot of excitement that he could bring a bookend to Ryan Kerrigan in our pass rush. We didn't play him last year, so we're not going to miss any of his production on the field. So not as big a loss as it could have been, I think, for Washington. We've got Preston Smith, second-year player we're all very excited about, who's going to come in and take his place. But for him, a bit of a shame because it'd be nice if he could have slowly worked his way into the lineup over the course of this coming season. But behind those two guys, Kerrigan and Preston Smith, we're going to be struggling depth-wise let's hope somebody puts on a bit of a show in preseason.
Not really much else here to report. Nick Foles was cut from the Rams. That was sort of expected. I don't think we expect Nick Foles to end up in any sort of contract deals like Fitzpatrick. But he is a journeyman backup quarterback that has some value for some team. I just don't know what team Foles would best fit. Anybody have an opinion there?
Yeah, I wonder if there's any interest from the 49ers. You know, his one really, really good year came running Chip Kelly's offense. I wonder if there's any potential there.
I saw some speculation about maybe the Cowboys and maybe even the Redskins.
No. Washington are happy with McCoy backing up Kirk Cousins. I think you're just trying to wind me up there, Greg. But didn't Chip Kelly trade Foles?
Yeah, he did. Well,
so I wonder why you pick him up.
I don't know. I guess we'll have to see Nick Foles. And last item here that I see worth mentioning, Vikings announced a contract extension for coach Mike Zimmer. I have seen I saw them open up the new stadium there in Minnesota. What's funny about that is it looks like all the old new stadiums. So it's not even like I could be all that impressed with a new stadium anymore. It's so boring how new it is.
Yeah. Jay, just going back for a second. Sorry, just to go back to Foles. How about Nick Foles signs with the Patriots to be a veteran backup over those first four games?
Well, that would be great if they didn't already have three quarterbacks on the roster. So if he does get signed for that sort of position, that means you're putting Jacoby Brissett either on the practice squad, which I guarantee he's probably going to get snagged by somebody, or you're carrying four quarterbacks on your roster, and that doesn't seem like a Patriot thing to do. So I think the Patriots are okay with their current quarterback construction. Are they feeling confident? Let's put it this way. Am I going to feel all that confident if Jimmy Garoppolo goes down and we're stuck with Jacoby Brissett? No. But I think the Patriots are willing to gamble that that's not going to happen.
I think it's interesting to talk potential places he could start. If we're going to spend all day talking about potential places he could be a backup, I'm just going to go right back to sleep.
Well, Justin, I'm going to allow you to go back to sleep because I think we've pretty much run the course. We want more interaction,
Jay,
from you fans.
Yeah. Oh. I got two more tidbits.
Interesting.
I thought Justin would be telling us all about the contracts for Schneider and for Carroll.
Only if you want just another one of what's becoming my weekly mini rant. These are contracts everybody knew was going to happen. There was never any doubt that Schneider and Pete Carroll were going to re-sign. The reason why, you know, we got this far was there wasn't a ton of urgency. There was no threat, no worry, no risk of them going anywhere. And in the Seahawks organization, these deals pretty much always get finalized just right before training camp starts. It happens every single year. Look at last year with Russell Wilson. Just look at any of these recent deals. So there was never any surprise to it. I think that you have two of the very best, if not the absolute best, head coach and GM in the National Football League. What was starting to drive me nuts, though, is you're starting to see these little reports about, oh, are they going to sign Pete Carroll? Oh, he doesn't have a contract. Ooh, all's not well in Seahawks land. The absolute worst one came from Pro Football Talk, where they had this entire article talking about how Pete Carroll might be leaving after this year to coach the LA Rams. And the only thing that they had to go off of was this bastardization of half of a quote that John Clayton said on local radio here in Seattle, which I listened to live, where they were just asking him to basically spitball, you know, what could possibly happen? And he said, oh, I don't know. I suppose he's from, spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. And they turned it into a news report that Pete Carroll is possibly not going to sign so he can go to LA. So this is just another example of a sort of, I'm not going to say the media, because I don't think that's fair. I think most people reporting on it, we're doing a good job, but how, you know, you can turn almost anything into clickbait, especially a story, which is a bastardization of a quote that was on the radio for half of a second, that you turn it into this big whole thing. So I'm not surprised that they got done. Nobody should be surprised that they got done. Anybody who even thought for a minute that there was a possibility that they wouldn't needs to get their head checked.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, you had two snippets?
I got two little ones. One, a good news story, actually. Victor Cruz is not on the pup. So he's actually going to try to make a comeback, I guess. That's good. And this is the big breaking news. Apparently, the Browns painted the walls in their locker room. It's all over their Twitter. So good for them.
Oh, that's fantastic. Hey, we want more interaction from you guys out there. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. Be like VJ. I mean, I literally sent out the saying, hey, if you got fantasy football questions for Christopher Harris, we're going to ask him those questions. VJ sent it in. We asked Christopher Harris his question. Boom, that's how it works. So we want more emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can always tweet us at NFU Podcast. One of our super fans is always monitoring that Twitter account. You never know which super fan you might get. So when you tweet, perhaps you'll get Neil. Perhaps you'll get me. Perhaps you'll get our Dolphins super fan. You never know. Tweet at it. Find out who's watching our Next Fan Up Twitter feed. And of course, on Facebook, facebook.com/NFU podcast, where we'll have lots of write-ups. As the season begins, we'll have a preview for each and every game from each superfan's perspective. And we will also have recaps of each and every game on our Facebook page, along with our podcast and many other things that we haven't even thought of yet, because we literally haven't even thought of them yet. So keep listening to the Next Fan Up podcast. Subscribe on iTunes. Share the show with a friend. This isn't a fantasy show, so you don't need to hide the valuable insights that we're giving you here. We want everybody to listen and enjoy the Next Fan Up podcast. And with that, I leave you with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.